It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Alarm is raised at the UN over escalating violence in Ukraine. The UN's political chief Monday expressed alarm at the escalating crisis in eastern Ukraine. Speaking at an emergency Security Council session, Jeffrey Feltman said Saturday's rocket attack that killed 30 civilians in the city of Mariupol constituted a violation of humanitarian law.
On Saturday, a barrage of attacks with multi-launch rocket systems hit the city of Mariupol, destroying buildings and impacting a market filled with civilians. Dozens of people lost their lives, including women and children, and over 100 were wounded.
U.S. UN Ambassador Samantha Power at that meeting accused Russia of trying to seize more territory.
The targets are fresh ones, but Russia's end goal remains the same, to seize more territory and move the line of Russian-controlled territory deeper and deeper into Ukraine.
She said Russia is trying to, quote, play the international community for the fool by blaming the surge in violence on Ukraine. Earlier Monday, NATO's Secretary General condemned what he called the sharp escalation of violence by Russian-backed separatists and dismissed Russian President Putin's claim the Ukrainian army is a NATO legion aimed at containing Russia. The Russian leader also accused Ukrainian authorities of refusing to seek a peaceful solution to the conflict. Reuters reports Nigerian troops backed by air support are trying to recapture the northeast town of Monguno along the shores of Lake Chad, captured by the Islamist insurgent group Boko Haram Sunday. Security sources say the offensive's objectives also include Konduga and the airport and outskirts of the main city, Maiduguri. On Sunday, Nigerian officials said soldiers repelled three separate attacks by insurgents trying to enter Maiduguri. This is VOA News. Alexis Tsipras has been sworn in as the new Greek prime minister after his leftist Syriza party won a sweeping national election victory. He promised to end economic controls that have led to sharp pension and wage cuts, higher taxes, and massive unemployment. International lenders who have kept Greece afloat with nearly $300 billion in bailout money appear unwilling to agree to the new Greek leader's call to trim the debt and restore many of the spending cuts that have been demanded. Martin Schulz is president of the European Parliament.
It is absolutely clear that this is a major change in the country and has an impact on Europe. Prime Minister Tsipras announced during the election campaign that he wants to discuss with the European Union about new measures in the frame of the program, that he wants to discuss about the program of the Troika, that he wants to discuss so-called memorandum. All these things are known, and we are looking forward to discuss with him. Quite clear for the European Parliament, we are open for all discussions, but it is also absolutely clear that we have to agree on the basis of mutual respect, trust, and that we have to stick to agreements made to stabilize the country and to stabilize the European Union.
Analysts say there's concern Syriza's win could inspire other radical parties opposed to austerity in Europe. A drone strike killed three suspected al-Qaeda militants Monday in Yemen. The unmanned aircraft targeted a vehicle in the eastern desert. Meanwhile, in the capital, Sana'a, uncertainty remains following a takeover by Shia Houthi rebels last week. The U.S. Defense Department says Kurdish fighters now control almost all of the Syrian city Kobani, thus denying the Islamic State militants one of their strategic goals. The Kurds, backed by U.S. airstrikes, fought for control of the city from the IS group for months. President Obama has pledged $4 billion in new U.S. investment and loans to India, but said trade between the world's two biggest democracies could be better.
We're moving in the right direction. I want to thank everybody here for the progress that we've achieved together. Now, that said, we all know that the U.S.-India economic relationship is also defined by so much untapped potential.
Mr. Obama told a business conference there are still too many barriers, hoops to jump through in completing deals between the two countries. Rebels of the Muslim Alliance Salika in Central African Republic Monday freed eight local officials kidnapped over the weekend, handing them over to UN peacekeepers. The country's sports minister, abducted Sunday, is still missing. In Mali, an army spokesman said at least two soldiers were killed in an ambush Sunday near the northern town of Dourakiri, at least three other soldiers wounded. There was no immediate claim of responsibility. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia predicts zero Ebola cases by the end of February this year.
We think we can make it to zero by end of February, the latest. We're very close to that. The border towns are being monitored very closely with Sierra Leone and Guinea.
Axel Addis, Liberia's Minister of Commerce and Industry, will examine the impact of Ebola on young girls as Sierra Leone prepares to reopen schools in March. Nigeria's main opposition says it will not accept any suggestion to postpone next month's presidential election. And why are some civil society groups opposed to the possible election of Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe as the next African Union chairman?
We call upon the Assembly of the Head of State and Government to elect a president who represents the principles of good governance, respect for human rights, the rule of law, and democracy.
Yvette Niyigarira is with the civil society group Fehimo, and the former director of South Sudan's radio and television joins the rebels. Those stories, plus Mark Oman's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A senior Liberian official says most of his country is Ebola-free, and he is optimistic that cases of Ebola can be brought down to zero in a matter of weeks. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Ebola cases in Liberia have declined from a peak of more than 300 a week in August to fewer than 10 per week in January. Liberia's Minister for Commerce and Industry, Axel Addis, said Monday that 13 of 15 counties now are reporting zero cases of Ebola for 21 days, the period of incubation for the disease. He says only about 31 patients currently are being treated nationwide in ETUs or emergency treatment units. He says the dramatic drop in the number of people falling ill from the virus is giving rise to hopes that this menace is nearing its end.
We think we can make it to zero by end of February, the latest. We're very close to that. The border towns are being monitored very closely with Sierra Leone and Guinea, and we're working with the teams in those countries to make sure that the cases in those areas do not spread beyond the borders.
Addy attributes this dramatic turnaround to better logistics and greater community participation. He says every county now has ETUs, contact tracing and burial procedures have improved, and the presence of 3,000 U.S. military personnel has helped coordinate international relief efforts. He tells VOA that greater community involvement in actions needed to curb the epidemic has made a huge impact.
I think once the awareness was elevated and community leaders were brought on board as part of the response, we began to see huge changes in terms of new cases. I think having the community take ownership of the response is one of the big reasons why we have had such a huge drop in the numbers.
While the government appears to be getting on top of the Ebola crisis, Addy notes the epidemic is still hurting the economy. He says the country's GDP growth has dropped from nearly 6% to less than 1%. He says the country's two main industries, iron ore and rubber, have taken a huge hit, and it will take years for them to recover. He says overall, Liberia has lost more than $93 million in revenue because of Ebola. Nevertheless, Addy says the government and business communities are in the process of wooing back investors now that the epidemic is on the decline. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
As schools in Sierra Leone prepare to reopen in March this year, the government is ramping up efforts to welcome children back to the classrooms, despite new hurdles posed by the Ebola crisis. According to a Ministry of Social Welfare official in the eastern part of the country, the education system has been hit badly, as more than 1,000 children who lost one or both parents will struggle to find the funds to return to school. Simeon Sandy tells Ricky Stryer that some girls may not be returning to school as teen pregnancy increased during the Ebola crisis.
The presidency has just said that by March, all schools should be reopened come March. They should all be open as of the beginning of March?
No, by third week March, schools should be reopening.
How is the school landscape going to look different in Sierra Leone with orphans who have had to move to a new school, people who have lost relatives? You know, what kind of measures are being put in place for the different social needs of these children who are going back to school?
The Ministry of Social Welfare is working with partners, UNICEF and all the partners to cater for these orphan children, because we know most of them have lost their parents. So we are still on course and we are still on negotiations.
How many Ebola orphans are there in Sierra Leone as of right now?
We are talking about thousands, because only for Kenema we have up to 600 children, orphan children, for only Kenema. And if we put together all the other districts, we have over 1,000.
Besides the children who are orphans, who are obviously dealing with difficulties at this moment, what about the other children who may have lost one parent, so they might be feeling pressure to stay at home and help out with the family, or families have lost quite a bit of their income during this time, and some of the older children might be pressured into going to work instead of going back to school?
Yeah. What we did, what was our classification? Even if you lost one parent, we'll classify you as orphans. We have the double orphans and the single orphans. The figure I give you is a combination of both single and double orphans. Although they are single orphans, but what the Ebola did was that the economically viable people got affected. So if even you have your mother can do anything because the father was a breadwinner. So you are still vulnerable.
And I know teenage pregnancy figures went up during this time. Do you have any numbers of how much teen pregnancy went up, and how is that going to affect girls' attendance in schools in Sierra Leone come March?
That's our biggest project now. We're really soliciting funds for, because as of now, we can only ascertain when school reopens. We want to launch all schools because we want to know how many PPs we are in school before the outbreak and how many have returned. Only by so doing, we really have cohesive statistics, correct statistics. Because up to now, some people are not willing to come out boldly to report, you know, to report because for fear, intimidation, that this of a child is pregnant. But if we visit these schools, we'll have first-hand information.
And is there still a concern that teen pregnancy did, in fact, go up? What kind of anecdotal evidence are you seeing?
Yes, with some statistics from FSU, it's really alarming. You know, we have the family support unit at the police station. We have some parents who are really bold to come out and report. And through community sensitization, we found out that a lot of these girls who have not been going to school have been impregnated due to one reason or another. It was through those indications that we know that indeed teenage pregnancy is up.
Simeo Sandy is a gender officer with Sierra Leone's Ministry of Social Welfare. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Kenema, Sierra Leone. Nigeria's main opposition All Progressive Congress, APC party, says its candidate in next month's presidential election, General Muhammadu Buhari, will not accept any attempt by President Goodluck Jonathan's government to postpone the vote. APC National Publicity Secretary Lyle Mohammed says the government has been canvassing media houses trying to influence editorial opinion in favor of postponing the election. The government has accused the opposition of politicizing the threat of Boko Haram, but Mohammed said the government is using the Boko Haram insurgency as an excuse not to have the election because President Jonathan knows he will lose badly in parts of the country under Boko Haram control.
The PDP is going around media houses trying to influence editorial opinion to make a case for the postponement of this election. Only this afternoon, a pseudo non-governmental organization went to block all routes leading to the Electoral Commission office, asking for 60 days extension. If any other group, which is not sponsored by government, did that kind of demonstration, they would have been dispatched by the police. Today, we know that some lawyers have gone to court to file spurious cases asking for the disqualification of General Muhammadu Buhari. We know that the federal government has sponsored many talking heads to go on television stations to canvass for election postponement or even an interim government.
With the Boko Haram insurgency, is it fair to argue that in such an atmosphere that it would not be conducive to have election, because one can argue that Nigeria is at war with terrorists?
What is the population of the area occupied by Boko Haram? Moreover, INEC has told us they will make provisions for all those who are internally displaced to vote. Now, a while ago, when I was in Washington, I made a case that this government is profiting from the Boko Haram insurgency because they want to use it as an excuse not to have elections. And they know also that they are widely unpopular in the Boko Haram held areas, and that if elections are held in those areas, the opposition will be returned, you know, massively.
Let me say that I did talk with President Goodluck Jonathan's spokesman, Ruben Abate. And then he says that you in opposition should join the government and have a single voice to fight Boko Haram instead of criticizing the government all the time.
Our answer to that is that there's only one commander-in-chief of the armed forces, and that's President Jonathan. And he has absolutely no clue whatsoever, or he has actually no political will whatsoever to fight Boko Haram. If you ask him, what does he expect the opposition to do? Of course, we are going to fight the government when our soldiers go to the battlefield with no ammunition. When our soldiers have to buy their own medication, they have to buy their own food. We don't expect the opposition to support that kind of thing.
Let's say if General Buhari gets into power, how would you deal with Boko Haram? How would you fight them?
Very simple. The first thing you do is that you revamp the entire intelligence gathering apparatus of government. Then you now increase the fighting capacity and capability of the army. You improve their welfare.
Lau Mohammed is the National Publicity Secretary of the Opposition All Progressives Congress Party. You're speaking with me from Abuja, Nigeria. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 27th. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. Civil society groups are opposing the likely election of Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe as the next president of the African Union. Martha van der Wolf reports from AU headquarters in Addis Ababa, where African leaders are expected to elect Mr. Mugabe to the position later this week.
Every year at the AU January summit, the continental body chooses a ceremonial chairperson, who most refer to as the AU president. This year, the seat will most likely be taken up by Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe. Eve Niyinagira is with FAHAMU, a Pan-African umbrella organization for movements that focus on social justice. He says electing Mugabe to the AU leadership sends the wrong message to Africa's citizens.
We call upon the Assembly of the Head of State and Government to elect a president who represents the principles of good governance, respect for human rights, the rule of law and democracy, as articulated in the Constitutive Act of the African Union.
President Mugabe has ruled Zimbabwe for nearly 35 years. Rights groups say he has stayed in power largely through election rigging and the arrest and intimidation of opponents. His re-election in the disputed and violent 2008 polls was especially controversial. But he has company in the African Union. The continental body has been often called a dictator's club. FAHAMU says Africa's 14 longest-serving heads of state have been in power for a combined 323 years. Two presidents, Angola's José Eduardo dos Santos and Equatorial Guinea's Teodora Obiang Nguema, have been in office longer than Mr. Mugabe. With 10 elections on the continent this year, Niyinagira is calling for the African Union to be more involved in ensuring free and fair elections.
We are observing a trend where a sitting head of state and government are either attempting to change the constitutions or attempting to extend their term of limits. In many countries, the attempt was done in Burkina Faso. It did not succeed. There are attempts to do so in many countries, Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, the Congo, Benin, Sierra Leone, and many others that are going that route.
The African Union has dismissed criticism it does not support free and fair elections. The body says it sends observer teams to countries holding polls and advises member states on how to address election-related problems. But barring some unexpected development, the next AU president will be a man who has ruled his country with an iron fist and continues to earn harsh criticism from human rights and pro-democracy groups. Martha van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
A top leader of the brutal lowest resistance army appeared Monday for the first time before the International Criminal Court in The Hague, ending a years-long search to bring him to justice. As Lisa Bryan reports for VOA from Paris, rebel commander Dominique Ongwen faces war crimes and crimes against humanity charges.
All rise, veuve levé. The International Criminal Court is now in session.
Dominique Ongwen has been wanted for more than a decade by the International Criminal Court. On Monday, he stood before the court in The Hague for a first appearance. Wearing a dark blue suit and a tie, Ongwen introduced himself to the court in the Acholi language that is widely spoken in his native northern Uganda. He said he was abducted in 1988 and taken to the bush at the age of 14. He said he had been a soldier for the Lord's Resistance Army. He also thanked God for creating heaven, earth, and its people. After giving himself up last month in Central African Republic, Ongwen was arrested and extradited to The Hague Court. He faces crimes against humanity and war crimes charges that include murder, enslavement, inhumane acts, and directing attacks against civilians. All date back to a 2004 attack on a camp for displaced people in northern Uganda. He's among several top LRA members wanted by the Hague Tribunal. Now 34, Ongwen rose the ranks as a child soldier. His lawyers are expected to use this trouble pass as an argument for leniency. Still at large is LRA leader Joseph Kony, who's also Ugandan. He, too, is wanted by the ICC for war crimes and crimes against humanity charges. He's being pursued by U.S. Special Forces and regional troops. In the late 1980s, LRA rebels rose up against the government in northern Uganda. They left the country more than a decade ago and have since been moving around the region, accused of terrorizing communities in South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and finally CAR.
And on this, I pronounce the hearing on the initial appearance of Mr. Dominique Ongwen closed.
Presiding Judge Ekaterina Trendafilova said Ongwen's next appearance for August. Those hearings will then determine whether or not he will face trial. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The former director of South Sudan's radio and television says he has joined rebels led by former South Sudan Vice President Riek Machar. Khamis Abdulatif says he defected to the rebels because of what he calls the corrupt system surrounding the government of President Salva Kiir.
My country is in chaos, is in troubles, because the type of the government who is ruling is not a government. And I joined Dr. Riek Machar because he's fighting for the future of the Republic of Southern Sudan. That's why I joined him.
But before, you were in the government of President Kiir, and you served as a security advisor, and then later you also became the director of radio and TV in South Sudan. Now you are saying this government is not good. Why were you in it in the first place?
As you know, the people who are struggling now, all of them, they were in the government. That is not a problem. If you are in the government and then you see this government is a useless government, man, what will you do? You must go out and then you fight for liberating your own people.
In your statement that you made in Nairobi on Friday, you were saying that you are joining the rebels of the SPLM in opposition under the leadership of Riek Machar because, according to you, they have the best option for the country. What option is this that you're talking to me that about?
First of all, Dr. Riek Machar is a democratic man. He's a man who is fighting for the unity of Southern Sudan. Republic of Southern Sudan is working for the good governance. He wants to get Southern Sudan is established very well. He wants freedom. He wants a lot of things. So that's why I joined him. He's better than Salva Kiir Mayardit. He's educated very well. He's also have a program. He's not a corruptist. He's not a tribalist. So that is why I joined him.
That was Khamis Abdulatif, former director of South Sudan's radio and television, who says he has defected to rebels led by former South Sudan Vice President Riek Machar. It's coming up at 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Marco Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the Orange Africa Cup of Nations in Equatorial Guinea. Little-known strikers Ahmed Akaisi scored in the first half before second-half substitute Loteteka Bokila replied as Tunisia and the Democratic Republic of Congo settled for a 1-1 draw in Bata on Monday. Tunisia's Akaisi is so far the tournament's leading scorer with 3 goals. Elsewhere, Cape Verde Islands and Zambia played through heavy rain and drew 0-0 in Ebebiyin in the other Group B tie. Tunisia topped the group with 5 points. The Democratic Republic of Congo and Cape Verde Islands are tied on 3 points. The Congolese joined Tunisia in the quarterfinals on account of a better goal average, while Zambia finished at the bottom of the group with 2 points. Meanwhile, Cape Verde Islands coach Rui Aguas is hugely disappointed that they narrowly lost out to the Congolese in their quest for a quarterfinal berth. He explains.
What can I say for Congo is happiness, for us it's the opposite. One goal makes all the difference, and football is like this, it's unfair, cruel, many times, and again, unfortunately for us, our turn.
That was Rui Aguas, the Cape Verde Islands coach, speaking in Ebebiyin. Staying in Ebebiyin, Zambian coach Ona Janza says the waterlogged pitch affected his game plan. He elaborates.
Going by the weather, in football you anticipate something like that can happen. Like our type of football was a bit affected, but we cannot cry over it. See, it was beyond any human control. It was a challenge for us to go forward with the speed, because you saw players like Lolambo could not manage that, because we needed to use the speed. Cape Verde, they are very organized in defense, so if you don't have the speed, you cannot break their defense. But it's slightly affected. But of course, we had one or two chances, which we should have taken advantage of that. But it's a game.
That was Ona Janza, Zambia football coach, speaking in Ebebiyin. Finally, Senegal tackle Algeria in Malabo as South Africa face Ghana in Mongomo in the last Group C preliminaries today, Tuesday. Senegal lead the group with 4 points. Algeria and Ghana are tied on 3 points. However, Algeria is ahead on account of a better goal average, while South Africa has 1 point. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, January 27th.
Good morning, Daybreak Africa. You will permit me use your medium to call on all the presidential candidates for the forthcoming presidential election in Nigeria to shun religious and ethnic sentiment in their campaign, because we have only one Nigeria, one nation. For all the 250 ethnic groups, as well as religions that they may govern tomorrow. Albert Alagbo, from the Department of Public Administration, in Akanibi and Federal Polytechnic, Ebonyi State, Nigeria. Thank you.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A captured Lord's Resistance Army commander has made his first appearance before the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Dominic Ongwen confirmed his identity and was informed of the charges against him during a brief court session on Monday. That's it for this Tuesday, January 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Button, Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very nice day.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This one, this one,
every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.